Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, psychics, and even Bigfoot. The show is about to begin. Greetings, everyone in internet land. Hope everybody had a great week last week, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. We're going to have a good show tonight. We don't have a guest, but on the second half of the show, at about 8:30 West Coast time, you can call into the show if you want to talk about paranormal, maybe share a paranormal experience. The call-in number is 215-383-3999. That's 215-383-3999. And so Sherry and I are just going to talk about some stuff we pulled off the web. And Sherry, how's it going?
Good evening, everyone. Pretty good. How are you, Jason?
Not too bad. We were talking a little bit before the show started, and I just had a lazy day. I needed a little time to recoup, recharge.
Excellent. Well, I ran this morning, so I'm training for another half marathon, so trying to get some mileage in and just get ready for April.
The only way you're going to catch me ever running is if I'm being chased, and that probably won't happen because I'm pretty imposing, so things don't chase me.
Unless you're being chased by a bear, right?
Yeah, well, that or the police.
Okay. Oh boy. So anyway.
So, yeah, what's been going on? Have you now I did pull some stuff off the internet. I don't know. Do you want me to start with my thing before you go into yours, or you want to start?
Sure. Go ahead. Go ahead and start with your stuff. Your stuff sounds more intriguing than mine. I'm going to talk a little bit about black-eyed children.
Black-eyed children. You know, I do know a little bit about that, so I will have some comments on that, as you know. But we'll start with mine tonight. So I'm going to talk about, and I don't know how long this is going to take, probably not too long, but I like to do these top 10 things. I've done them quite a few times before on Paranormal Horizons, and I like them because I find them interesting to kind of divide it up so you get to hear 10 different short things versus me babbling on about one thing. So tonight I picked out the top 10 paranormal hoaxes out there. And I don't think this is in any particular order of importance, but I'll just go down each one, and then Sherry, if you have any comments on it, we can talk about it. And these are, for the most part, very well-known paranormal events, or events that were purported to be paranormal. So here we go. Here's the first one, King Tut's Curse. When Egyptian pharaoh Tutankhamun's tomb was discovered in the early 20th century, a curse was found inscribed over the entrance. It said, "Death shall come on swift wings to him who disturbs the peace of the king." Before long, stories were being told about unnatural deaths of workers on the site. King Tut's curse eventually found its way into popular culture and set the stage for a whole sub... I can never say this word. This has come up before on the show before. Genir, how do you pronounce that? You know, a sub. You know what word I'm talking about?
Genir, you talk about?
Is that how that's pronounced? Genre. This is hilarious. I don't even know. Genir, you know.
Genre.
I think it's genre.
Okay.
Yeah, hilarious. I need to go back to English class. But
anyway, where you come from, right?
Yeah. It's the second time that I've tried to say that word on the show and botch it every time. Oh, well. So yeah, it was really popular in stories and in movies. But in 1980, a security officer for the original excavation site admitted that the stories had been circulated to scare away thieves. Historical records actually show that most excavation workers went on to lead normal and healthy lives. So is the curse real or not? Who knows? But apparently, according to the security card, most of the people survived. And I know, just based on memory, that the main guy that opened the tomb, I don't know, remember his name, but he like got bitten by a mosquito and caught malaria or something and died. And so they're reporting that to be a hoax. What do you think? Do you think King Tut's curse is a hoax?
I don't know. I have no idea. There might be. It could be superstition. It could be something that's in belief system that goes way back. I have no idea. What about you? I don't know. There's a lot of people that believe in that kind of thing.
Let me ask you this. If you found a tomb like that and it was full of vast riches, and over the entranceway it said, "Death shall come on swift wings to him who disturbs the peace of the king," would you go and take the riches? Or would that supposed curse be enough to keep you out?
I probably not. I probably wouldn't.
I think I'd be torn. I'd be like, I don't know. That's a tough one, because I don't know. But the next one. Have you ever heard of the Cottingley Fairies?
No. Never have. What is that? Gosh.
Oh, I accidentally hit the wrong button. Now, the Cottingley Fairies, 1970 and 1920, young English cousins Elise Wright and Frances Griffith produced a series of photographs depicting themselves interacting with fairies. In modern times, it's hard to imagine how anyone could be fooled by these obvious fakes, but in the early 20th century, they were convincing enough to attract a huge following and dupe such notables as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It wasn't until 1981 that Wright and Griffith admitted the hoax, although they continued to claim that they had indeed seen fairies. It was clearly a hoax, and anybody that wants to see the pictures, you can Google Cottingley Fairies, and it's clearly not real.
Okay.
But that was a long time ago, and so it's kind of interesting, and it shows how people can be so influenced by, you know, the claims of other people. But today,
so
because we're...
fairies, they're elementals, my understanding, and I believe that there are fairies out there, but I've never seen them with the naked eye, let alone caught them on my camera. So you find that there are people that are into elementals and fairies, but, you know, I don't know. I have not had that experience, but I don't want to discount that it doesn't exist. Okay? Yeah.
Well, we've had talked about fairies on the show a long time ago, and somebody that photographed fairies. And you know me, being the resident skeptic, I didn't really believe that they were fairies, but who knows? I don't know. I certainly don't know everything. So, the Cottingley Fairies in the in 1970 and 1920 were pretty popular. So that's another one that has been debunked as being fake. And here's yet another one from even earlier. In 1869, workers digging a well in Cardiff, New York, uncovered what appeared to be a petrified remains of a 3-meter giant. That's 10 feet. Archaeologists declared the body to be fake, but the public reaction was more accepting, especially those who considered it evidence to support biblical history. Apparently, there's talk of giants in the Bible. I don't know anything about it. The body became such a business asset as crowds paid for a glimpse. Showman P.T. Barnum tried to acquire the body, but eventually made his own replica, which caused additional controversy over which was the genuine giant. In December 1869, tobacconist, I didn't even know that was a word. I guess if you sell tobacco, you're a tobacconist. That's awesome. George Hull confessed to the hoax. The body was sculpted from concrete and buried a year prior to when the well was dug up.
Wow.
So there was a tobacconist, that might be my new favorite word, who made a giant concrete giant and dug it or buried it in the ground for a year and became quite popular, despite the fact that it was identified as being a hoax by experts. Here's something a little bit more recent. Have you ever heard of Uri Geller?
Yes.
Yeah.
What does he do? Telekinesis? He moves objects, is that correct, with his mind?
I don't think he moves objects. He was the spoon and key bender. But he also does some other stuff. I believe that he would get on these airplanes and companies would hire him to fly over certain countries, and he could detect where there was like gold or minerals and stuff like that. But he was most famous known for his spoon bending. During the early 1970s, he enjoyed huge success with his mentalism acts. It was, like I said, based on his ability to bend spoons with his mind. He defended his claim to supernatural powers until hard evidence finally caught up with him. In 1982, a book by James Randi exposed Geller's tricks, and he was caught multiple times on camera manipulating stage props. And there were some lawsuits between him and James Randi. And I don't know if you're too familiar with James Randi, but he's a very old magician and very popular back in the day. And he goes and exposes people that claim to have psychic powers. And he has offered for many years a $1 million reward for anybody that can prove that they have psychic powers. And this has, I believe, been around for decades, and no one has yet claimed the $1 million reward, because they come in and he does it under, you know, very controlled circumstances, and him being a magician, you know, he knows a lot of the tricks. So not one psychic has gone to claim the $1 million reward, and he has a foundation. I believe it's called the James Randi Foundation. So if there's any psychics out there that can move objects or like be a fire starter with your mind, if some pyrokinetics or whatever, get in touch with the Randi Foundation, because there's $1 million waiting for you.
That's interesting. Wow. I do believe that the power of chi, power of energy, can do things, but I don't know. You know, when you're I'm lean both ways. I really do. I mean, I can see where the guy wants to know if it's true that somebody has the power, but that another way of thinking too is, why do I have to prove something? Oh, and I know it's true and I can do it. Why do you have to prove it? So I can see both sides of it. See? Okay.
If I had the power, I'd be claiming that $1 million. That's for sure. But
in a controlled environment, right?
Yeah, well, I guess money isn't, not everybody's into money, but for me personally, I like money, so I would go for the money.
Okay.
In fact, there is actually some really entertaining videos on YouTube of where James Randi was on stage, and they'd have a psychic, and the psychic would do whatever he does, and he would be debunked on stage. And there's one in particular that's really amusing. It's this guy who can move the pages of a phone book with his mind. And I think he can also move a pencil. And so he demonstrated what he was doing, and then James Randi got in there and showed that what the guy was doing, he was very subtle with his breath. And so it was totally debunked. He was basically breathing on the pages and breathing on the pencil, because the pencil was half on the table and half not on the table, so it was kind of teetering. And, you know, the guy would wave his hands around it and move his hands one way, and then the pencil would twist that direction. But he was actually very controlled with his breath. So, yeah.
Wow,
so that's
very interesting.
Yeah, it's an amusing video. Watch.
Have you tried the one with a needle, where you put the needle with the papers on top, you balance a piece of paper, and you fold it into four different triangles, and you lay it out where the paper is balanced right on top of the needle, and you try and move the paper? It's a PSI experiment.
I haven't tried that.
Okay.
I've tried, when I was younger, I tried all that because I was really, really into that, and I never got anything to move. No matter how hard I concentrated, it was a complete failure with moving objects with my mind. But there are some people out there that have been studied performing those things, and I'm basing this on memory. There's a Russian named Nina Kulingina or something along those lines who there's video of her doing it under controlled circumstances with, you know, plexiglass boxes over the objects, and also she was able to make matches ignite and stuff like that. And when she was doing it, her heart rate would like jump up to 180. And so I don't know. I don't know if it's real or not. Boy, that would be cool. And, you know, if I had this telekinetic power, I don't even think it's called telekinesis anymore. I think it's called psychokinesis. If I had that power, I'd be probably in Vegas playing some dice game. That's just me.
Knowing you, Jason, yes.
Right. Yes. Yeah, you do know me. You know I like to play those slot machines, so you know I'm a gambler at heart.
Oh, my gosh. And I think about spending $20 or $30 or $40, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, boy, I can use that for a good pair of running shoes.
All it takes is, you know, just winning big a few times, and then you get hooked, unfortunately. But anyways, that's not paranormal. So here's one that you've definitely heard of, the Amityville Horror. Yeah, 1974, Ronald DeFeo Jr. shot and killed six members of his family in Amityville, New York. A year later, the Lutz family moved in, only to move out 28 days later, claiming they'd terrorized by a ghostly presence, or presences. Their story became a best-selling book by Jay Anson and the basis for a series of films. The franchise has been highly successful, banking on the claim to be a true and verifiable story. It was investigated closer, however, and it seemed a lot of the story could not be verified. Police and other records contradict the book's account, and many holes have been found in the story. In 1979, lawyer William Weber claimed, and this is a quote, "I know this book is a hoax. We created this horror story over many bottles of wine." So apparently, he alleges, and I've seen some videos of this guy talking about it, that this was all a concocted story over wine, of all things. And what better story to create with wine? I mean, you know, get your buzz on and come up with a story.
Let the spirits out. I do believe there probably is some haunting in that location, but, you know, when you're, it's interesting because it's, you know, when they're trying to make money, that's just wrong. I mean, if we find something wrong, we can look for something wrong in anything that we can, you know, any subject. But, you know, perhaps there were, you know, paranormal activity and things. But, you know, when you have to make it up and try and make a profit, I think that is just terribly wrong. That goes against your karma. So.
Yeah, it's with, and I've talked about this before, the level of fakery and hoaxes, especially in this digital age we live in, where any lay person can create videos or Photoshop pictures, and it really kind of does a disservice to people that take it seriously.
And, right, exactly.
Unfortunately, it's made a mockery of the paranormal to the point, and I'm an example of that, of being was a big believer, and now I'm Mr. Skeptic because of all the nonsense out there. And that being said, however, I have conducted many paranormal investigations, and while I can explain a lot of things that I've come across, I've encountered things that I can't explain as well. So there's more to the universe out there. We're discovering, even science is discovering things every year that we didn't know, and you know, things like dark matter and all this crazy quantum mechanics and stuff like that. So, who knows? You know, then that's the thing, is that nobody knows. And I don't know if we'll ever know, because people will always be overly eager to believe, and people will be overly eager to not believe. So it's kind of like UFOs, those all
mind,
sorts of evidence.
You know,
yeah.
Just try and keep an open mind, because what I don't know and just because I have not experienced doesn't mean it's not out there. There's a possibility that there is, just like UFOs. I've never seen a UFO in my life, but I'm not going to discount that they're not there and they don't exist. But I'm going to have an open, you know, like I said, I have an open mind to know that there is a possibility. So I'm on this planet to learn and grow and to share. So.
And,
okay.
That's noble causes. So I'll go through these next. I just have a few more, and I'll go through them really quick. The Loch Ness Monster. You know that famous picture of the Loch Ness Monster, the one from way back from the 30s? Okay, well, there have been many hoaxes associated with the Loch Ness Monster, but none more enduring than the surgeon's photo. That's the name of that photo. It was taken by Dr. Kenneth Wilson in 1934. It wasn't the first sighting of the monster, even the most convincing, but for decades, this photo was an icon in the world of cryptozoology. The hoax is believed to have been orchestrated. I guess Dr. Kenneth Wilson, I think he submitted the photo, but I don't think he took it. It was orchestrated by a photographer, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce that name, who had previously been humiliated after taking photos of a fake monster's footprints. In 1975, a newspaper article explained how the monster in the photo was actually a toy submarine attached to a wooden neck. So basically, this photographer had been busted before for taking fake footprint photos, and then he did this photo of the Loch Ness Monster, which apparently was a toy submarine with a neck. So there you go on that one.
Oh, jeez.
So who knows? Okay. That one you don't know. I mean, that's just debunking a picture, but the monster's been sighted many times before. So here's another good one. The Shroud of Turin. And for people that don't know, it's this ancient shroud that appears to have the image of what is believed to be, or who is believed to be, Jesus Christ on it, and so they believe it covered Jesus when he died, and his image was imprinted, and they call it the Shroud of Turin. The debate still rages over the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin, believed by many to be the burial cloth of Jesus Christ, the image of the man apparently dead from a crucifixion. It's obvious when viewed as a photographic I'm messing up my sentences here. Anyway, the image of first revealed in 1898 by the amateur photographer Secundo Pia, who had photographed the shroud at Turin Cathedral. So I guess he took a picture of the shroud in 1898. Scientific examinations indicate that the image was made with tempera paint sometime between 1260 and 1390 AD. So they basically scientifically determined that the paint was in the, you know, the 1200s to 1300s, so that's way too old to have anything to do associated with Jesus Christ. So, and that one's really highly touted as being like a fact. If you look at it online, people are completely believe that that is actually the burial cloth of Jesus. So, but according to science, not. But as with anything else, who knows? Maybe scientists are wrong. And I'll do one more here, and then we can go on to what you have. The Fox Sisters. Have you ever heard of the Fox Sisters?
No. I don't know who they are. No.
Well, they're not well known today. The Fox Sisters are responsible for one of the most influential hoaxes of all time, even now, more than 150 years since the original events. The effects can still be seen in the spiritual beliefs of millions of people. In 1948, two New York sisters named Kate and Margaret Fox claimed they could communicate with the spirit in their home by means of audible tapping or rapping. The sisters toured the United States and built support for their spiritual movement. By 1853, spiritualism claimed over 2 million followers worldwide, largely buoyed by the success of the Fox Sisters. the idea that humans might be able to communicate with spirits became a part of Western culture, which continues to this day. Wrappings have long since gone out of fashion, but the basic belief in communication by cryptic signals remains popular. I mean, we see that all the time if you watch all the popular ghost shows, you know, make a sound, tap on the wall. So, the reason that we know this is a hoax is Margaret Fox explained how the wrappings worked in a signed confession published in 1888. This is a quote, what she said. My sister Katie was the first to observe that by swishing her fingers, she could produce certain noises with her knuckles and joints that had the same effect. And she could also do that with her toes as well. So they could make raps with their feet. That's pretty interesting. She could do it with both feet. They practiced until they could do it easily. And... you know, and they were doing these scenes in the dark. So the Fox sisters eventually fell out with each other. Lay married a respected businessman, while Margaret and Kate, I didn't mention Lay, there were three of them. Margaret and Kate developed severe drinking problems. All three sisters died within 5 years. And they were pretty much ostracized. When it came out that it was totally fake. So basically, to summarize, you have three sisters, and they would hold these scenes at when it was dark, and they were making ghost sounds with their toes, and that has affected millions of people. Can you imagine? Something so simple as that, as making sounds with your toys or toes, can influence people, you know, 100 years later. So, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That's crazy. Okay.
So that's all I got. There are your hoaxes. It's all you now.
Well, I'm going to get in really quick. It won't take very long because in case we have any viewer call-ins, anybody would like to talk about their paranormal experience or has any questions, please come on through and call in. In the meantime, I'm going to talk about black-eyed children. So, Jason, you said you've heard about black-eyed children?
I know black-eyed children well.
Okay. So, anyway, viewers that have never heard of that, I'm just going to go for a really short story. It says, knock, 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 knock. It usually begins with the continuous knock at the door. The knock continues until the door is answered. In some cases, it's ding-dong, ding-dong, ding-dong. It's a continuous of the doorbell ringing as if somebody is pressing the doorbell button without releasing it. Once the calling at the door has been answered, a request is usually submitted. Can we use the phone? Can we use your bathroom? Can we get a drink? Can we have something to eat? Can you give us a ride? Can we come in? When the request is either denied or not achieved to their satisfaction, being allowed to enter the house or getting into your vehicle, the spokesperson becomes agitated and more firm in asking to be allowed to enter. Once the spokesperson realizes that the request is being denied, his or her desperation causes an act of carelessness of keeping their head down to hide their facial appearance. The child is unmindfully raises their head and reveals their unique eye features by making contact. The questions: what do they really want from us? What happens if we let them in? Who and what are they? And where do they come from? These are many theories on who these children are and what they want. One must keep in mind that this falls in the category of the paranormal phenomenon, and not much to be determined as answers to the many questions that follow these encounters. Though each possible theory may be value that fits the phenomenon, the truth and the answers lie between the details of each and every report. In order to understand this phenomenon and to its fullest, it is extremely important for eyewitnesses to come forward and to detail their encounters. So, black-eyed children, basically, their eyes are black. There's no whites in them. They're totally, totally black. And so there's some controversy on where these children come from, whether they come from a different planet. Are these spirits from a demonic dimension? We don't know that, but there have been countless of testimonies of people that have experienced black-eyed children themselves.
Do you want my two cents on that?
Go ahead. Please.
Do you have more on that, or?
In some cases, the adult recalls a sense of being under the influence of a hypnotic state. I realized I was opening the door wider for them to enter. I find myself reaching for the door handle to open my car door. I felt myself becoming submissive. My brain was screaming, "Wake up, you fool!" And when the adult firmly makes the final stand by closing the door or drives off, the child or the children seem to vanish without a trace. I peeked out the window, and there they're gone as they were vanished into midair. I looked into my rearview mirror, and they were gone. So it's an urban legend. I don't know, you know, I have no idea, you know, whether, you know, it's true or what, but you do hear of people that have had encounters of black-eyed children, like you hear people have had encounters with aliens. So, again, I'm not going to discount it, but, you know, there's a possibility they are extraterrestrials. Who knows? We don't know that. We don't know where they come from. They're, like I said earlier, they're demonic phenomenon or whatever. So, okay. Shoot, Jason.
Well, I'm not a big believer in black-eyed kids. I do know quite a bit about it just because I'm a paranormal nerd, and I research stuff a lot, and I've talked to a lot of people regarding all sorts of phenomena. But the reason I'm not a big believer in black-eyed children is that that phenomena didn't really take hold or wasn't even really known at all until a movie came out, and I don't remember the name. It was not a mainstream movie that featured black-eyed kids. After that movie came out is when we started to hear the stories about the black-eyed children. Now, the other thing with that is anybody can be a black-eyed children or adult or whatever. All you have to have is $100 because you can go online and buy what are called sclera lenses, which they use in the movies. Anybody can buy them. And they cover up the white part of the eye. And I don't remember what's that called. Is that the cornea or just the white of the eye? Anyways, it covers up the whole eye. And so certainly in some cases that has to be the case. There are a lot of videos online on YouTube with people showing you how to actually insert these sclera lenses. So they're pretty cool. In fact, I considered buying a set because they're so awesome. Now, that being said, I can't explain everything. I'm just saying that I know that the phenomena didn't really come to light until after that movie came out. So I would say that it's probably a likely source of where that started. However, okay. I know somebody that has had a black-eyed child encounter. So I tend to believe people that I know, you know, so whether it was a case of somebody wearing the lenses, it was a very odd encounter with a couple people, and I don't remember the details of it, but she swears up and down that she had this weird and black-eyed child encounter. But I do imagine in a lot of cases it's probably kids running around with these sclera lenses, but who knows?
What she did when she encountered the black-eyed child?
I don't remember. All I remember was that it was during the day, and there was a couple weird people that didn't fit in her neighborhood, and they came up to talk to her and had the black eyes, and it was just kind of this weird experience. I don't know. But yeah, I'm not a big believer in that. I'm pretty sure that's a hoax. I also know somebody that took the stories of the black-eyed children and created his own hoax. he started a thing called White-Eyed Children, the same thing, just children with white eyes. And he made up a bunch of stories about white-eyed children, and guess what happened? People started to take notice of it and start spreading a white-eyed children thing. And I know the person so that made all that up. So
my
there
goodness.
You go. That's
Thank
my
you.
Experience.
That's something new. White-eyed children. Woo.
Yeah, well, okay. If you ever hear about white-eyed children, I know the source of that. So anyway, so we have a couple callers. If you're ready to take
that
a caller,
great.
We can do that. Well, since we have two callers, let's we'll take the one that's been holding the longest, and then we'll get to these the second caller. So this is a local caller.
Hello?
Hello, you're live on Paranormal Horizons.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How
good.
Are you?
Good, very good.
Excuse me. Well, I have a pretty interesting paranormal story I'd like to share. Well, it was more of an experience, I guess. We had a pretty wickedly haunted house I lived in when I was on active duty in the military, of all things.
Hmm.
I'd like to share that if we have a minute.
Yeah, go for it.
We have
time. We were stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, and living in Virginia Beach in a condo, of all places, not some creepy house or anything. And myself and my first husband and a couple of roommates all moved in, you know, and everything's okay for the first month or so. And I started getting these weird vibes. And a fellow roommate of mine was also picking up on some weird energies in the house. And one morning over breakfast, we were having coffee, and we kind of look up at each other, and at the same time, we finish each other's sentences. I ask him, "Have you been noticing?" And he says, "Any weird stuff going on?" And I'm like, "Yeah, exactly." And he said, "Yes, I have." And all of a sudden, we hear a huge crash in the kitchen. So we go running in there, and the coffee pot had been flung across the room and smashed against the far wall.
Oh,
and we both look
goodness.
At each other and go, "Oh, crap." Like, that's not
wow.
good. Really creepy.
Yeah.
And so that was the first incident. And then kind of calm for a couple of weeks or so. Then we started noticing photos that were knocked down or sometimes even upside down, things misplaced, you know, weird stuff like that. And there was always kind of a creepy vibe anyway. So we were wondering, well, maybe somebody's pranking us. You know, it could have been, it's the military, you know, sometimes we play pranks. So we were all going on a deployment for, you know, maybe 5 days underway. And we got one of those automatic tape recorders to see if we could catch anybody coming in our house or something. And we turn that thing on, and we all go on deployment because we're all stationed on the same ship. And when we come back, we have the weirdest stuff on this recording. Now, normal things, you know, you hear a truck go by, it would click on. You know, aircraft going overhead, military aircraft are really loud. They shake the house. It would come on. But we also heard, you know, screams, footsteps, doors slamming, all kinds of weird stuff over this, you know, 5 day period. And I started getting a little creeped out, you know, like, wait a minute. And so we're pretty convinced that there's something there. I've had houses that were haunted before, and it wasn't, you know, an evil thing or anything like that. So we really didn't think that much about it. But it's progressing. And around this time, I conceived. And what's really creepy is that later on during this haunting, it became evident that this entity wanted my child. Like, I think
Yikes.
It even knew I was pregnant before I knew I was pregnant. And it started to really escalate as my pregnancy went along. So there was this little thing, like a creature. I could see it in the mind's eye when I would fall asleep. And it would bob around in the corner of the master bedroom. And as soon as I'd go to sleep, it'd run up and it'd pull my hair, physically yank my hair. And I'd wake up, and I could see it bouncing back over in the corner, and it would bob around, and it was kind of like a I don't know, a weird-looking thing. It wasn't human, you know. And I was really like, oh, my God, what the hell is this? You know, it's freaking me out. And my husband's starting to get a little freaked out.
Did they have
and I don't know what it was.
Okay.
And so, and every night it would pull my hair until the point where I couldn't, I wasn't sleeping at all. I mean, it was really difficult. And so that stage kind of came and went, and the house is still creepy, but, you know, we're making it, and it's okay. And then I'm pretty pregnant at this point. I'm probably about 8 months pregnant. And there was a skylight in the master bedroom. And I'm sleeping, and, you know, I get this really weird feeling that something's watching me. And I wake up, and I look up in the skylight, and there's these huge glowing red eyes and some kind of mouth thing in the skylight. And I scream bloody murder, and I leap across my, at the time, husband as best I can, grab the revolver on the nightstand, cock it, and I'm ready to fire off, you know, all six rounds. And he's grabbing my arm, going, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, oh, my God. Well, my screaming woke up her roommates, and you hear something going thump, thump, thump on the roof. And one of my roommates was a really hardcore hunter. He and his dad used to get dropped in the wilderness in Canada for 2 weeks at a time hunting, you know, who knows what, bear, you know, huge animals. He wasn't afraid of anything. So, you know, he's awake at this point. He runs out on the balcony, and he's climbing up on the roof. And we're like, oh, my gosh, you know, what is it? What is it? And he comes down, and he's white as a sheet. I mean, this guy is terrified. And we're like, what is it? What is it? And he's like, I don't know, but there's cloven hoof prints in the snow, and I saw something leaping from rooftop to rooftop to get away. And we're like, oh, my God, what the heck?
Yeah.
But it wasn't until years later I'd watched a documentary of something called the Jersey Devil, and the descriptions of the Jersey Devil pretty much fit what we saw that night. So it might have been that, I don't know. But, you know, everything's really escalating in the house to the point where I no longer can take a shower in the master bath alone. My husband at the time had to sit in there with me. I was terrified. It was like you'd go in there and it was so cold, you were freezing, and you could feel something just on the other side of that curtain, you know, shower curtain, and you just know it's like right there and it's like breathing on you. I mean, it was horrible. So things kind of calmed down a little bit. I have the baby. She was born in April, you know, everything's going along, and then it starts to get really weird. Like, we are downstairs, and she was a really good baby. She slept through the night every night, so there wasn't a lot of waking up and screaming or anything like that. We're all downstairs watching the telly, and we got the baby monitor, and all of a sudden we hear this blood-curdling scream coming from the master bedroom where her crib is. So we're all scrambling to get up the stairs, you know, and my one roommate who had witnessed that Jersey Devil thing, he got to the bedroom door first, and he throws open the bedroom door, and we're right behind him, and he goes in the bedroom, and it's so cold, we can see his breath, and he can see it, and it's freezing in our bedroom, and I'm looking over his shoulder behind him, because I'm trying to, you know, get in the bedroom with everybody else, there's like four of us, and there's this black, cloudy thing hanging over my baby in the crib. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And he runs to her, and she's terrified and, like, paralyzed in the crib, staring up, just screaming and shaking this little thing. I mean, she's only a couple months old, you know, if that. And we scoop her up, and, you know, we're, like, trying to calm her down. And I'm like, okay, that's it. We got to do something. And, you know, I grew up with magic, and I know how to use magic, and especially in a protection situation, or how to banish a negative entity or, you know, energy. And happens to be that one of our roommates is a practicing Wiccan. So he knows what's going on too. So we put together a spell, a ritual basically, to get this thing out of our house. And we gave it everything we had. We used frankincense, myrrh, and we got, you know, those 12-hour votive candles, and they burn for, honestly, 12 hours. We put several of those in the bathroom because that was where it was really located, really icky. I think it lived in there. I mean, it was weird. But anyway, and we light them, and we do the ritual, and we're blessing the house and sage going and everything. And those votive candles, their flames shot up 2 or 3 feet, and they burned out in 3 hours. gone. So I was like, uh-oh. And let me tell you, frankincense and myrrh just pissed it off. I mean, it got way worse after that. Banging all the time, shaking the bed. I mean, it was just angry, you know. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I never felt so helpless in my life because I did everything I knew how to do, and I've seen it work before, and there was nothing I could do now. It was so angry. And we were downstairs one night, and this is getting close to when I'm getting out of the Navy at this point, and we're just going to have to leave because there's really nothing else we can do. I've done everything I could, and so did our roommates. So we're stoking the fire, and there's just a little tiny bit of ember in the fireplace. Nothing burning, really, just a few embers. And my roommate, now the same one who witnessed the thing on the roof, I don't know, it seemed to really mess with him. He's poking at the embers, you know, trying to put them out, and all of a sudden it flares up into, like, flame arms and reaches out for him and grabs him and tries to pull him into the fireplace. It burns his hair, his eyebrows, and I was like, oh, no, no, we're done. We are so done. Like, I am not staying here anymore. I've had it. I didn't know what else to do, and it just so happened we were leaving in probably a week anyway when I got out of the military, and we got a hotel, and we didn't come back till we had to pack our stuff, basically. And the Navy moves you for you, so really we just had to let the movers in the house. We're like, yeah, have at it. You know, I am so done with that. It was terrifying. And you have to figure, this was going on for over 9 months. But right before I got pregnant, all the way until after I had my child, and it was nonstop something or another every day. It was terrifying.
So did you ever find out about the history of that house or the land?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Actually, I don't know much about the land, but the one roommate that we had, the one who saw the thing on the roof, I don't want to use names because this story really scared a lot of people. I mean, the people I lived with at the time, they don't want to even talk about it, so I don't want to put them on blast on the radio. But he was friends with our landlord, who also owned a few other units in this condoplex. So, and he didn't get out of the Navy right away, so he was still there when we went back to Ohio. And in keeping touch with him, he calls up a few weeks later and says the landlord and he were working on the building, on the apartment or condo next door to us to get it ready for rent again. And under the carpet, they had to tear up the carpet and stuff, there's bloody runes on there. I don't know if there was a pentagram or anything on there. I don't think so. But he said there were specialized runes painted in blood and pieces of hair, you know, like chunks of hair, not like you would shed hair, but actual chunks with scalp in the carpet and on underneath the floor and painted on the walls were all these bloody runes and whatnot. And it, I think, from what he's telling me, it sounds like somebody was conjuring or trying to conjure something from the other side, and they probably had a walkthrough that they didn't know how to control, and it got out. That's what I think happened.
Got out. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, anytime you're conjuring something, if you don't do it exactly right, it will get loose, you know. And so, yeah, I think that's what happened, and it got loose, and it smelled the light of a newborn, and that's what it wanted. And it was terrifying. It really was.
It sounds like it needs to be a movie.
Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Oh, it sounds like it needs to be a movie. Like, that would make a great movie.
It probably would, you know, and I even thought about maybe writing, what is it, a haunting on Discovery Channel or something and telling them, hey, this is what happened if you want to do an hour story on it, you know. But I never really did because I'm not sure my fellow roommates and friends really want to be exposed because they were really traumatized over this, you know. And the only reason I'm not like 100% traumatized is because I grew up around stuff like that, you know. But not everybody has. It was freaky. It was really freaky. And as far as the land goes, there very well could have been a history from the Civil War or slavery or, you know, even the Native people that were there first. You know, I don't know. But I do know there was something going on in the condo next door. So, pretty weird.
Yeah, that's probably the...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's probably the most intense haunting that I have ever heard of or talked to anybody about. I mean, that's
Oh, really?
That's got, Yeah, I mean, you got the Jersey Devil type thing looking in there. You got the fireplace trying to eat someone. You got super cold and hip-hoppity apparitions. And
it was terrifying to live there. It really, really was. You know, I'm actually kind of shaking now, having told that. I don't really talk about it that often because it was, you know, difficult to live in an environment like that where you have no control. Even when you do know what to do in a haunted situation, it didn't work, you know. I don't battle demons, you know. That's like my dad's area. And he was in Oregon, so there you go.
Wow.
But yeah, it was very intense. And I even had a girlfriend of mine come over because I had to tell somebody, you know. And a girlfriend of mine in the Navy, I told her, look, this is what's happening. And I'm not sleeping, I'm not eating. And she's psychically sensitive, and she said, oh, well, I'll come and, you know, check it out. And I'm like, okay, you know, at least get some validation that I'm not crazy at this point. And she comes over, and I take her up to my bedroom, the master bedroom where most of the activity was, and she took one step toward my bedroom door, and she turned and looked to me, and she said, I have to go. And she ran down the stairs and didn't talk to me for a week. And I'm calling her and calling her.
Literally,
you know?
Really.
Like, what?
She ran
what?
Down
She's
the stairs
like,
and
you
didn't
need
talk
to get out of there,
week.
Is what she told me. And
oh
turns out
God.
She was right.
Wow.
And that
so
was,
you moved right away.
We moved about 4 or 5 months after my daughter was born. So, I mean, I was in the military. I really couldn't, you know, you don't have a lot of money when you're in the military unless you're a high rank. And I was only an E4. You know, so moving wasn't really easy, you know. I had to wait till my time was up, and the Navy was going to move me on the government's dime. You know, they move you when you get out of the military or when you transfer. They pay for it. And so I really just kind of had to wait until it was time to go. But the last week and a half or 2 weeks, we stayed in the hotel because I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't because, no, I did not want that thing getting my baby. That's what I was afraid of the most. And it
well,
wanted
thank you
her.
For sharing your story.
Oh yeah, thank you. I've never told anybody about this in a professional setting or forum like your show. I really appreciate you giving me the time to do that because it was really wow.
Yeah, that's an intense experience. I mean, I couldn't imagine something half that intense. I mean, that is terrifying. And
yeah,
like I said, out of all the people I've talked to, I don't think I've ever. I've talked to people that have had really severe hauntings, but nothing quite to that extreme. So yeah.
When an entity, you know, it's powerful enough to manifest itself on the physical plane and touch you, you got a serious problem. That's a serious problem. It's no longer. It's not a ghost. Ghosts can't do that. You know, it takes a little more oomph. So it was. You're right. It was scary. It really was. So well, thank you very much. I'm sure you have another call, so I will continue to listen to the show.
Awesome. Well,
thanks.
Thank
you for your support.
Yes, thank you very much. Absolutely.
Yeah,
guys,
thanks
take care.
For sharing that. You too.
You're welcome. You're
bye.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So our other caller just hung up. It was our friend Tim in Alaska, but I think he had to take another call. So we don't have another caller, but that's okay because we're actually running out of time. And, yeah, that sounds like a really intense haunting, Sherry. You know, if something was looking through a window at me with red eyes and cloven hoofs and hopping rooftop to rooftop, I'd be a little concerned.
I don't think I'd ever be the same. Yeah. Definitely something you don't want to mess with, and more than what you know, I'd be comfortable in handling when it comes to, you know, helping the departed cross over to the other plane. This is something that is quite different, you know, quite different than, oh, that is just horrific. And I'm so glad that she had the, you know, the courage to be able to come out and share that with others and you know, that maybe others are not alone that they're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's when you have something like that happen, it's kind of hard to talk about it. I know I've had some pretty weird things happen that I kind of shared with you last week privately. So I'm, you know,
right.
I have an open mind. I'm not totally closed off to it. And so, yeah, I want to thank her for sharing that. Now, yeah, we're kind of running out of time. You were talking a little bit to me privately about some of the guests we got coming on. And do we have next week?
Next week will be Stan Gordon, a regular from Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. He's had 50-plus years, I believe it's 53 years experience in cryptozoology. And he's going to talk about his findings and different cases of his experience in that arena. So very, very popular guest on with George Norrie, and I was very fortunate to have him. And he would love to be on our show and talk about strange and unusual creatures. And I do want to give a shout-out to the Home Center. I'm going to be, as all you know, all of you know, I'm a psychic medium. I will be doing a gallery reading March 19th from 10 to 5. I will be there as a vendor, but I will be doing a gallery reading at 1 o'clock p.m. So those of you, if you live in Oregon and you're close to Salem, it's at the Home Center. It's 3892 Lancaster Drive, Northeast. And it's going to be on March 19th from 10 to 5, and I will actually be doing a gallery reading. So folks that do want to maybe go in and sit down and possibly connect with those that are loved ones, it would be an opportunity to be able to get a reading, a mini reading. Okay?
Awesome.
So, anyway...
So, yeah, so we got a few minutes left, so I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm going to close the show with a commercial I made for Dayton, Ohio Supernatural. It's a couple minutes long, but I want to thank everybody for listening, the caller for calling in and sharing that story, and ask anybody who can to check out the Facebook page on Facebook, Paranormal Horizons on Facebook, and give us a like. And with that, Sherry, if you have anything else, I'm going to go ahead and play the commercial and we'll end the show.
Yes, I do. I have, right after Stan Gordon, the week after, I'm going to have a gentleman named Warren Bull. He is a certified coach for Law of Attraction. And so if any of you know about Law of Attraction, it is founded by Esther and Gerald Hicks. And he's going to talk about attracting those things that we want in our lives. And he helps clients improve their lives and helps them to attract the things that they want and what we want. And he's going to go into full detail. So I'm excited to hear about Law of Attraction.
I am too. And as you know, I'm a big believer in that. That's one thing I am a big believer in. We create our own reality and certainly can manifest things in the physical world that you want. So, excited to learn how to do that better.
Yay! Definitely. Definitely, Jason.
Alrighty then. We'll close the show with a commercial for Dayton, Ohio Supernatural. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you again next week, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons, and I hope everybody has a great week. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Peace.
You are about to enter into the world of Dayton, Ohio Supernatural.
They are being red. Holy water. Now.
Oh, no. This ball just moved.
It's moving again.
Is your house haunted? Are you experiencing strange things such as moving objects? Strange sounds? Footsteps? Then you should contact Dayton, Ohio Supernatural Paranormal Investigations.
Get in here now.
You guys hear a little girl? I swear I just heard a little girl.
You can locate DOS on Facebook at facebook.com/ Dayton, Ohio Supernatural DOS.
Would you be mad if I sprinkled some holy water down here?
Cleansing.
Okay, I got pushed on the septic now. Swear to God. Oh my God.
The paranormal world is all around us. We don't always see it, but it's there. If you're experiencing strange things in your home or business, why don't you give Dayton, Ohio Supernatural a call and see if you can get some answers.